This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, I'm Kim Bloomer. I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Jeannie Thomason, your other host.
And today the show is entitled Still Wild, The Soul of a Horse. We are supposed to be speaking right now with Joe Camp. He is the author of The Soul of a Horse, and he hasn't called in yet, so we're going to try to get him on the line, and we'll do that in a minute. But he is the man who is behind every Benji movie and the whole thing behind Benji, isn't he, Jeannie?
Yes, he is. That's what everybody knows him from anyway, I think.
That's true. And yes, he still has a Benji, and yes, he is still doing that, but he went into the soul of horses. He got into horses a couple of years back, and they captured him. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why, because Jeannie and I have been in love with horses our entire life, and so here we are talking about horses again. But we're going to hear from one of our partners, and when we come back, we will work to get Joe on the line with us. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Well, as I said, we are speaking today with Joe Camp, the author of The Soul of a Horse, and also the movies and books and everything you've seen on Benji. You can find out more by going to Benji.com and also TheSoulOfAHorse.com. Jeannie's going to talk with you while I attempt to get Joe on the line, so I'll be right back, hopefully, with Joe on the line.
And I guess I can just tell you a little bit about the book. Maybe I was thinking I might even read you part of the foreword, which is written by somebody that most everybody knows of, Monty Roberts, the horse whisperer. And he wrote a little foreword in the book for Joe Camp. And what he has to say is, Joe Camp will immediately settle your nerves. He will cause you to be comfortable in his presence, and very soon you'll feel as if you have known him most of his 68 years. He has a warm smile and a shock of white hair covering his head that houses a brain most teachers would classify as extremely fertile. As I write this, I've known Joe for less than a year, but it seems a heck of a lot longer. Of course, I knew Benji, and I have marveled at how those stories were put together. But imagine how inadequate it makes me feel to realize how recently Joe has come into horses. The man is a natural when it comes to understanding how animals tick, and what a genius at telling us their story. The Soul of a Horse will entertain you while it educates you. It will take you on a journey from the prehistoric horse to the modern-day domesticated partner that we all seek to better understand. Joe looks a bit like a Nevada buckaroo, can converse intelligently with the university professor, and is a Hollywood movie producer all rolled into one amazing human being. The Soul of a Horse is a must-read for those who love animals of any species. And, of course, we know Monty Roberts is also the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Man Who Listens to Horses, which is an award.
Well, Jeannie, you just keep right on talking, girlfriend, because I called him on his cell phone, and he wants me to call him on his hard line. So keep on going.
Okay.
In the meantime, everybody can go to his website at www.thesoulofahorse.com and also Benji.com. Go on ahead, Jeannie, we'll be right back with Joe.
Okay. Hope I'm not boring everybody, just kind of giving them a little heads up. But it is a really great read. It's, you know, even if you aren't a horse person, don't have horses in your life, this book is really, really great. You'll really enjoy it. I was going to see what else we had written in here. The man behind the canine superstar, Benji, he wrote, directed, and produced all five of the celebrated Benji movies and all of the Benji television programs. He is also the author of three other novels and inspirational nonfiction book. So what happened was Joe got a surprise birthday gift of a horse, and he kind of fell into the world of horses because of it.
Yeah,
and
we've got him on the line, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
However late.
That's all right. We're glad you're here, Joe.
Delighted to be here.
Great.
So it was, you know, we've all enjoyed your movies about Benji growing up, but I have to tell you that this book, The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd, as Jeannie was just sharing with our audience, I'd have to tell you that that book was very moving to us because you shared, you were very transparent in how you shared your journey into what I call the journey to horse.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a true story. It's a story that I found really fascinating because, you know, we've only been doing this 3 years. The opening line in the book says this is for everyone who's ever loved a horse or loved the idea of loving a horse.
Right.
3 years ago, we were in that latter group. We had always been one of those that kind of had the yin to have some kind of a relationship with a horse. We'd pull off the road and look at, you know, foals dancing in the pasture, and had read the Black Stallion books and all of that, but had never really ventured into it. And when we did, it was like, boonk,
I think all at once.
And it wasn't, she didn't give me a horse, actually. What she gave me was a trail ride. And just from a simple trail ride, surprise birthday gift, we wind up 3 weeks later with three horses.
Wow, three
without
weeks.
Without a clue.
You filled up those nice little stalls that you had that you loved looking out at each evening, though, didn't you?
Right. That's, you know, as it says, I think, in the second chapter of the book, we'd sit up there and look at the sunset in the evenings and look over these stalls that just kind of came with the house and say, wouldn't it be nice to have a couple of horses, one, you know, pretty picture and postcard-like thing at sunset, and all of a sudden we had three in those stalls down there and had no clue what to do with them, how to take care of them, or anything. And if it hadn't been for, you know, very accidental stumble onto an article about Monty Roberts, who is the original
horse whisperer.
It was all based on his book, The Man Who Listens to Horses, and he said very succinctly in this article, and I came home and got the DVD and the book to find out how to do this, is that you should begin at the beginning with a relationship with your horse, and by giving the horse the choice to come and have a relationship with you and to trust you, and everything changes when that happens. And that's the first thing I did when our horses came here, is I took Cash, the guy who's on the cover with me of the book, down to the round pen and did a Monty Roberts join up with him. And when he walked over behind me and touched me on the shoulder and sniffed my ear, I just broke down. And then he followed me around, and it changed everything. I mean, he, from that moment on, so long as I was a good leader, you know, he said, I have made the decision to trust you, and with that goes responsibility and willingness and generosity and all these things. And so that's how we started every one of our horses, and they're all the same way. They're all exactly that way. They have made the choice. We haven't forced it on them.
Right.
And then we have spent the time to, you know, be out in the pasture with them and see how they, you know, how they communicate and how they work with each other, so that we can be, you know, if we're going to be head of the herd, we need to know how to talk to the herd. And
exactly.
I don't think too many people begin at the beginning anymore. You know?
I find that kind of interesting, Joe. And you know, anyone who's listened to our show for any length of time knows for some reason this year, we've been doing a lot of horse shows and having a lot of people who are what we consider experts in natural horse care, and they say the same thing. There's just it's growing. We're going back towards that exactly what you talk about in your book, but not as fast as I'd like to see it.
Yeah, or me either, obviously. You know, and but you know what I've found. I mean, the book is not just about the natural trainings and relationship things. Mm-hmm. It's about the, because once Cash came up and said, I trust you, to me, you know, I said, I will not, you know, I will not violate that trust. I will find out what we need to know to make sure these guys are living on a day-to-day basis the way that they should be, you know, not just in relationship, but, you know, what is a horse? At that time, you know, I figured they were born with shoes on. I don't think I'd ever seen a horse, you know, didn't have shoes on or, you know, didn't pay attention to it. And, you know, wild horses, did I know that they existed? I don't really think it ever even entered my mind that there was a relationship, you know, because the there is a school out there who are dealing with horses who tend to want to make you believe, or make themselves believe, I think, that, you know, the domestic horse and the wild horse are two different creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, they are exactly the same genetically. This is what I found. I mean, we didn't know it at the time, but digging through all of this and where we finally wound up is that, you know, yeah, there are wild horses out there now, and they've been out there for 55 million years. And this is a prey animal, you know, a flight animal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That, what's the most important thing when a wolf or a cougar goes running after a horse? You know, his feet. You know, and he's got to run over all kinds of terrain and get away from this predator. And Mother Nature has equipped him quite well genetically to have, you know, rock crushing feet that will support him. And you never ever see. And I've talked to numerous people, you know, who have studied horses all their lives in the wild, and you don't ever see lameness of the hoof in the wild.
That's just right.
It's not there. And yet 95% of the horses, according to the American Farrier Association, in domestic care have some kind of lameness issue of the hoof of one kind or another.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
because of those nails being pounded into their hoof.
Do the number. Well, it's more than that. I mean, the hoof is supposed to flex, and here's the nut of all of it. The hoof is designed genetically to flex. When it hits the ground, upon impact, it is supposed to flex. And what happens when it does is it sucks an enormous amount of blood into the hoof, which runs through the thousands of capillaries, you know, in the hoof, you know, irrigating it and keeping it healthy, but it also provides kind of a hydraulic shock absorption, you know, with all that liquid going in for the, you know, the leg, the joints and the muscles and the ligaments and the tendons of the leg. And none of that can happen when a metal shoe is confining it, when it's nailed to the foot and it, you know, and it's being confined. And when I read that, that was enough. You know, I said, yeah, I'm going to go find out more about this. I'm going to figure it out. But that was it. I called the vet, and I said, shoes coming off. He said, wait, what? He said, why? And I said, do you know that the hoof is supposed to flex? Well, yeah. I mean, you know, they taught us that in vet school. And I said, and you know it can't with a metal shoe on it? And
yeah,
all of its health, not just his foot, but all the way up the leg and even the heart, a study of the heart rates of a whole lot of horses showed that any horse that is barefoot has a 10% on average less heart rates, reduced heart rate, than one that is shod, because the heart doesn't have to work as hard to get that blood up and down the legs, because when that foot is lifted off the ground and the hoof wall pops back into position, it shoots that blood back up the leg, thus helping the heart get it back up there where it's supposed to go and around the body. So this also winds up affecting the immune system and the entire health of the body.
Let me ask you this, Joe, when you discovered this, and I know that that's why we entitled the show Still Wild, The Soul of a Horse, you state very clearly that there is no such thing as a domestic horse. There are wild horses in captivity.
Right.
And when you discovered all of this, and you went on a mission, as we have, Jeannie and I have been, you know, kind of Bible thumping natural animal health for a while, what was the reaction that you got from people around you?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I wasn't worried about the people around me in the beginning. What I was worried about is finding out what was right and digging and getting the information. And it's not just feet, although that's a really good example of how we have, you know, misused this creature. But, you know, as Kathleen says, that you get you know, you have all kinds of groups raising and spending all sorts of amounts of money to make sure that lions and tigers and elephants and everything are living in their natural habitat when they're there for our, you know, viewing or use or whatever. Yet we have 10 million horses in this country that are living in jail, by and large, most of them.
Exactly.
And when it finally all boiled down and I found, you know, discovered that really the horses are genetically the same. And every scientific study that I've read says every horse on this planet retains the ability to revert to the feral state happily and healthily. And that, you know, what that means is you can take your horse out and turn him loose in the wild and he's going to do better than he's doing right now, probably.
And get them shoes off too at the same time. You know, he did just fine, right?
And that's all. And, you know, as it evolved, and as we went down that. You know, I don't want people to think that the book is, you know, all this preaching, because I tend to get up on the pulpit when I start talking. The book is the story of our stumbling around learning all of this, you know, and it's, you know, it's pretty hysterical in some cases, because we were definitely stumbling and bumbling around and finding out stuff and saying, let's go for it. Let's give it a try. And so, you know, the shoes came off and, you know, we determined how to trim, you know, a trim that is replicating what's happening in the wild. And what it's all come down to in a nutshell after all this period is all we're trying to do is that, no matter what, whether it's feet or body or diet or movement, you know, a horse in the wild is going to move 10 to 30 miles a day. And his body is built and his feet are built to do that, so that, you know, because he's got to do that to find food, to find water, and to stay ahead of predators. And in a stall, on average, you know, a horse moves 800 steps a day.
Well, and then they get fed twice a day. And,
right.
You know, interestingly enough, Joe, we did a show a few weeks back on equine iridology with a woman who has actually mapped the horse's iris to, you know, to be able to determine. Iridology is a fascinating study. At any rate, she has a diagram of the horse's intestinal tract and stomach on her site, and it's small.
It's a tiny little stomach, and all this back, you know, gut intestine stuff that is meant to have, you know, a forage like grass or grass hay going through it 16 to 18 hours a day to stay in optimum health.
On constant movement.
And what happens in the, you know, domestic situation more often than not is they're not getting the movement, they're not eating 16 to 18 hours a day, for goodness sakes. They are, you know, getting two big fat meals out of a bag morning and evening. And that bag is, you know, more than likely a bunch of stuff that, you know, the horse is not designed genetically to, you know, to process or to need, and, you know, it's got molasses holding it all together, which is absolutely gross, just like it is for us. You know, the more you read about our own, you know,
the
health
sugar
diet is, get those NSCs out of there,
right?
And you know, watch the bread, watch the pastas, watch the sugar, and you know, the horse can't find molasses in the wild, I don't think.
That's right.
Either.
And so anyway, and I use the, you know, the example of the foal. You know, it never occurred to me. You know, you see a brand new foal, say, "Oh, that must be a day old. Holy moly, look at it playing out there." And it never, you know, I never stopped to think, is there any other animal around anywhere that on the first day of its life, the first hour of its life, it's standing on its feet. Second hour is eating and thinking. Third hour, it's playing in the field.
Right.
Third hour after birth. And by the second day, it is ready to travel the 10 to 30 miles the herd would have to travel in the wild. And Mother Nature doesn't know this baby was just born in a stall or, you know, small turnout or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's doing everything within her power, you know, to grow the hoof and to do the stuff and do everything that's necessary to, you know, allow this foal to do this very quickly. Why? Why isn't it like a puppy, you know, with his eyes closed for 2 weeks, or a kitten, or us? You know, I mean, how long is it before we can go travel 30 miles a day over rough terrain?
Quite a while.
And yet this baby horse can do that because Mother Nature said, not on my watch is that wolf going to be able to get after you. Mm-hmm. Because if you get out in the wild and the wolf or the cougar is coming and the herd is there, who's she going to go for? Going to go for the baby? You're going to go for the big fat stallion?
For the baby.
So that baby's got to be able to move right now and is programmed to do so genetically. And the fact that that baby is still programmed to do it, even if it's born in a stall, proves to you and anybody else that, the genetics are there to do it right. And all we have to do, depending upon the living conditions of the horse, is to help them along and help them accomplish what they would be accomplishing if they were living in the wild. And so that's, one by one, these things began to fall with us, and we wound up over time with, creating this 1.5 acre, slide, I call it. The pasture that they're in goes almost straight up and down. It's dirt and rocks and nasty, but it's the kind of stuff that is really good and healthy for them, and healthy for their feet and the backs of their feet and the lateral cartilages and all. And it's in a circle, and there's an inner circle, so they can't cut across. In other words, they've got to make the round all the way around, and they do so 2 or 3 times a day because that's where we put the food. We scatter it in 50, 60, 70 piles in the back of this little, four-wheeler kind of thing, all the way around the pasture every morning and every evening, so that they're getting the movement, they're in a herd. That's another thing, the horse being in a herd is vital to its stress level, because, it's a prey animal, it's a flight animal, and its safety is in the herd. It's not like a dog. A dog will run with a pack for the hunt.
Right.
But a dog doesn't have to live in a pack and doesn't care about it. A dog will go out on its own, or a wolf, or a coyote. Every coyote we see around here, although we hear them in mass, they're always alone or in twos or something. They're not herd animals. A horse is a herd animal. You put 20 horses together anywhere in 2,000 acre pasture, and you can count on the fact that they're all going to be close together somewhere, because that's what's safe. And a horse will sleep standing up. We've all seen that. But a horse cannot get REM sleep standing up. A horse can only get REM sleep when it is laying down flat on the ground looking dead, which scared me to death the first time I saw it. But it will only do that in most cases when there is another horse around to guard.
And that's amazing. And you've allowed your horses that, I think not even, it's not a luxury, Joe. It's not a privilege. It's your honor to allow them to live the way that nature intended them to live. And I think that is really noble. And I think that your book will be very encouraging to those who are seeking to do likewise for their horses. It was very encouraging to me because you shared your journey from starting out as brand new horse owners who'd never had horses, within 2 years, coming to this mindset, which is awesome, and I'd like to see a lot more horses receiving that kind of care.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
I hope, the book is not written like I sound right now. The book is really a story, and it's very emotional and very funny,
and written with another story within it.
Yeah, there's a parallel story of a herd in the wild that dates all the way back to the 1500s and comes forward again that sort of mirrors in the wild what we're learning about them as we went along. It all finally came together in the end when we said, this is just, it's just a wild horse, and it took us that long, to figure all of that out. But it's written, as a story, because that's what I am. I've spent my life telling stories, usually with animals, with Benji and Benji
you're
movies
still
and
doing,
everything.
You're still doing Benji, aren't you? I mean, you're
well, she's lying at my feet right now.
Uh-huh.
and And, you know, she started Benji off a leash in 04, and there's, you know, a Benji and Mustang movie coming. But the point I wanted to make is that what the reason I tried to write a really good story about our journey and about these horses is because I think that's the way you affect people. You don't affect them by preaching to them, because people get defensive and they say, in order to admit that they've been doing something that could be wrong for their horse, they got to admit that they've been hurting their horse all that time. Mm-hmm. That's hard. Mm-hmm. But if you get under the radar and affect them emotionally, as we were, as we went through this process, you know, and what I try to do is lead the reader through the process with our eyes and hearts, because if you do it the way we did it, then you can't help but be affected, because you know that what these horses need is not necessarily what you're doing, and you got to figure it out. And a lot of people say, well, I can't put them out in the pasture because they would never come back to me. Start at the right place. Start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like we did, and yes, they will, because you're part of the herd, and they
right.
want to be around you.
Well, it wasn't accusatory in your book at all, because you led from your own, like you said, your own perspective, and mm-hmm. so it helps. I think anybody who's doing things traditionally or status quo, and they read the book, I don't think it's threatening at all, Joe. I think it just helps them to see that it's a progressive mm-hmm. journey. It's not an overnight thing, and I think that was real encouraging. It would be to even somebody who's never had horses.
Right.
So,
that were maybe thinking of getting horses.
Thinking of getting horses.
Right. And there's a lot, we've had a ton of people so far read it, that never even, hardly ever been close to a horse.
Mm-hmm.
But, anybody who, loves animals, loves relationships, I think
exactly.
will love this book. And and that's the thing that we've been, we've been hearing from people. And, it made it to number 54 nationally. The non-fiction hardcover, category the first week. And we haven't seen the second week yet.
Ooh.
So we're waiting to see that, because we're clawing and scratching, trying desperately to get on that, that bestseller list, because I think when concept and pressure begins to come from the people who are not horse people as well as the choir, that's when change can really take place.
It is.
And I think it's so important that we look at that. And there's a lot of issues and there are a lot of things to take into consideration, but there's always a way to do, to do it, to make it better for
mm-hmm.
the horse. There's always a way to get them out of that stall, get them moving, to feed them right and get the shoes off and all of that. And
I thought of you, Joe, when I was driving through the mountains the other day and we were house hunting, and I saw two horses in a real tiny little pen. I mean, my backyard's bigger that I live in now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, as I saw him, my husband commented, "Hey, look at those two horses in that little tiny area." And I looked over, and it was really quick. And one was cribbing, which is, he's gnawing at the fence and everything, and his ears were, you could just look at the whole body language. And you do talk about body language quite a bit in this book. And it was sad to me to see him so stressed out, this poor horse.
And that's what a lot of people, don't get past the point. And, we were there at a point where we said, these are bad habits. This horse has a bad habit. And you tend to ask people, so does he have bad habits? Was he going to crib or this or that? Oh, no, he doesn't crib. He doesn't, it never occurred to me that, I thought it was, one horse does, one horse doesn't.
Right.
Like people are good and people are weird and other people are bad and so forth. But the concept that this beast that needs to be out there in the wild in a herd with, moving all the time, never entered my mind, and that's why he's doing all that stuff.
Sure.
You get him out there, he doesn't do it anymore.
Right.
We have had no vet for a year and a half now, except for shot time, and we talk about those every time we do it. And then, we have, there are no stall vices because they're not in a stall. And they're not,
mm-hmm.
the stress is not there.
Right.
And they're, being free fed, that is, they can get some of that Bermuda. They get their vitamins and stuff in the morning. They all know where their little tub is. And then they exchange tubs and things. But they do an enormous amount of movement. My guess is you're probably moving 10 or 12 miles a day. And, you know, you can do this. There's all kinds of ways. I know one couple who had, you know, very little property, and they built one of these tracks like we have, you know, only smaller, all the way around their house with electric fence. So they did, you know, the horses still had a big circle to go, and they put the hay scattered around. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, 1,000 acres or, you know, or 1 acre. The idea is to understand the horse well enough to know what's going to keep him moving. Well, if they're with the herd, the dominant, you know, who's ever dominant over number two and over three and four, you know, as they go down the line, everybody's got their pecking order place. And it doesn't matter who's eating on pile number one, there's going to be somebody come along and say, I'd like to have some of that. Move. And so they move, and, you know, they go to the next one, push everybody down. Then the, you know, the dominant says, that one over there must be better. Y'all get out of the way. And so, that, you know, it's going to work no matter how small the area.
How many horses do you have at this now?
At this moment, we have 5. We had up to 7 at one point.
And I know that it's probably going to, with horse people, that's always changing.
Yeah, well, it's probably not going to change with us anymore, because we got talked into selling one that I really didn't want to, but the people were so nice, and they have a setup like ours, and the guy was begging for a Christmas surprise for his wife because she didn't have a horse anymore to ride, and they loved this horse, and he was pretty snotty out in the pasture with the other horses.
You talk about him on your website.
Yeah,
too.
Not to us, but to, you know, the other horses. And, you know, Kathleen was pretty, you know, she was looking forward to getting down to 5. We lost one in November who died. It's the first time we'd been through that. That was a horrible experience.
Oh, that's really hard.
I imagine.
But Scribbles is now living about 10 miles north of us, and we go see him every once in a while, and he's all in love with a young Palomino filly. And and it's funny because he's got a herd of 1, 2, 3 up there, and outside of the little pony who used to be dominant, and Scribble said, nope, that's not going to happen here. And it took her about 3 weeks to finally give in and say, okay, I'll just be one of the herd. But it's a totally different dynamic because he's not snotty with any of them over there. He's just does his thing. And it's very weird to me how all of that.
Kind of like people, they are that way.
It works. You know, with this group, he's okay. And this group over here, he feels like he's got to be, you know, be a little more snotty. But you know, there's no question that they're going to keep moving like that, and to, you know, keep that movement up. And it's so good for them. And all we got to do is go in the pasture, and if they're not in sight, you know, yell for them, and, whoa, what are they doing here? We got to go see what's going on.
They're so great. And I love the photo of you and Cash on the front. I mean, it just speaks volumes. And I really hope, we've come to the end of the show, Joe, but I really hope that people will pick up a copy of this book, The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd by Joe Camp. And just think of Benji, and you'll know who Joe Camp is. But now he's doing similar with horses. And, you know, one of the things that is said on his site is that he did bring us the soul of a dog through Benji, and now he is definitely bringing you the soul of a horse through this book. And again, Benji's probably going to, like you said, he's going to be in this movie with the Mustang, so I'm sure that's going to be awesome. And the best thing is, it's family friendly, you guys, and even if you don't have a horse, you will love this book.
Definitely.
And I'd love to come back sometime and talk about racing, you know, now that the Triple Crown is in action, and we happen to.
We'd love for you to, Joe.
That would be wonderful.
That's a whole separate mission.
Whole other story,
you know,
huh?
I am climbing on that one too, like tilting at windmills.
Oh, you are. Well, we'd love to have you back, and I'm sure that we will. And we hope everybody, again, go to the website at www.thesoulofahorse.com. Pick up a copy of this book. You will not regret it.
It's in all the stores now, and climbing up from that 54 position to get in on that bestseller list.
I'm sure it is.
Well, and then you can find out more about Benji, too, by going to benji.com. That's BENJI.com. And Joe, we usually put our guest on the spot, so we're going to put you on the spot and ask you, what parting words of wisdom would you like to impress upon the audience in closing?
Wow.
Well, your whole book is full of wisdom, so.
It's a lot of things, but I say, no matter what the animal is that you have, or the people, the thing we learned from this book and from learning to get on the other end of the lead rope with the horse was that's where we need to be with all of our relationships, whether it's with our spouse, kids, boss, employees, employers. That things work better when you stop long enough to look at the expectations and the aspirations of the person on the other side instead of trying to force the aspirations and expectations that you have onto them. And whether it's horses or people, I think that that works really well, and it's a good way to approach life. Can we do that all the time? Probably not. I don't. But the nice thing about horses, who taught it to me, is that I work really hard to do it with horses because they are 1,200 pounds, and you want them to be in relationship. And
right.
And there's a little more physical motivation there, I guess. But it's certainly that I keep in the forefront of my mind all the time. And I think it's a good thing to, that's why it says life lessons from the herd.
Right.
It is. Well, thank you for being with us, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Time out of your busy schedule. Jeannie's bird wants to know that I'm happy. And thank you so much for being with us, and we invite everybody, please go to thesoulofahorse.com, get your copy, and then come back when Joe comes back on the show again. We've enjoyed this time. It was short. It usually is for our book. Our book shows, but hang out, because there's so much to learn, and there's so much to learn about these magnificent animals. Tomorrow, Celeste Yarnell will be joining us to talk about cat care naturally, so we hope you'll join us for that. And in the spirit of love and truth, we hope you all have a
tail wagging, hoof stomping, wing flapping, perfectly animal talking day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.